Blog Talk Radio.
From the heartbreak of King James to the scandal in Dona Ana and broadcasting from a repossessed, rebuilt, refitted, and propane-fired burrito mobile, Kelly O'Connell, 6:06, the 5th of June. And, man, do I have a great story for you. The guy that brought to light all of the stuff going on down at Dona Ana County has been fired. That's right, folks. No whistleblower goes unpunished, right? So I actually talked to Mr. Hernandez yesterday. He is tentatively coming on the show Wednesday. So make a note on your calendar. But Robert Hernandez, who is... RJ, Robert RJ Hernandez, fired. They're not saying why, but he was a temporary employee, so county officials weren't obligated to give an explanation for the decision. But downtown Julia Brown showed up with the pink slip. They can terminate temporary employees at will. According to the Sun News, this is an at-will state anyway, so employment state. RJ was philosophical. He said, I was expecting it. There was no reasoning. I was simply told I was a temporary employee and I couldn't be terminated. I could be terminated in any time, which I was aware of. Now that he's not a county employee, he's announcing he will run for election for county clerk in 2016. And Lynn Ellen's DeGeneres was not running anyway. Jess Williams' spokesman said he can confirm the changes in Hernandez, and also another person who quit suddenly, Lori Munoz, abruptly resigned. And so there is a little bit of news for you there. RJ Hernandez fired as a thank you for bringing light to the scandal down there. And so we've got to get into this a little bit more. But what do you think of that, huh? All right. 523-1450. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows what's going on down there? but certainly nobody appreciated what RJ was doing down there in terms of bringing the stuff to light. Now that he's running on for the county clerk, maybe there will be some changes down there. And maybe if, and he's, from what I understand, a Republican. I'm not, I can't confirm this yet, but it's my understanding he is a, he's a Republican, that he would, maybe there would be a pushback against some of the crazy decision making in the county. So that's your news on that one. And I, as I say, we'll come back to that in a minute. NBA. Unbelievable game last night. Unbelievable. It was absolutely shocking to see that that the Cavaliers broke down in the final minutes. It went down to overtime. King James was or LeBron James was had 42 points, had a great game. And he was very efficient. He had done a lot of a lot of the right stuff there, but at the same time, in the overtime, I don't know if he was tired or if he was just, you know, sometimes you carry a team for the whole game and it gets a little bit overwhelming, you know, but it seemed to be that if he wasn't scoring, nobody was scoring for the Cavaliers. And then Golden State, I didn't see that much out of Steph Curry except when it counted. And the MVP, and so it was just the kind of a thing that when you saw it was I don't know, it was a great game. I don't know what else to say. It was really kind of epic the way that it went down to overtime, and I really thought, you know, with the basically. The way that, you know, James has been there so many times, I thought he was going to take over at the end of the game. And basically the Warriors, only the Warriors did well. And it was kind of shocking to see the Cavaliers break down. But, you know, it was one of these things in, I don't know. I don't know how else to put it except to say that it was, and I'm looking, for, also trying to multitask here and looking for a clip, but the fact that they were obviously close at the very end of the game and were you know, tied and then going in and then to see one team completely take it over. And it wasn't just Steph Curry. It seemed like three or four different people came up with big shots. So anyway, let's come back in just a second and I will play a clip of that for you. I just got to cue it up. It's 6:12 a.m. Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and we'll be right back. It is about 6:17 right now, and give you some headlines here in just a second. I'm queuing this thing up from the NBA, ESPN. And like I say, it was an exciting game. And by the way, if you don't, like, I don't have TV. I have cable in, obviously I have cable in for my internet. But if you don't have TV, if you're a TV-free, if you're one of those sane people that doesn't have TV, they're broadcasting this on ESPN3, I think. And I'll try to find for you the clip on the link to that. But ABC is doing the coverage. And so if you, I'm trying to remember where I said, I found it on another page and I clicked on the link and I've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes, this is Cheech. Could you play I Got a Basketball Jones by Cheech and Chong, please?
Oh, man, that's pretty good. Cheech and Chong, anybody? Yeah. Classic. All right. So, I don't know any Cheech and Chong fans out there, but... All right, here's a little clip from the game last night. That was the game right there, and it didn't really even focus on how they took over the end of the game. I'm gonna call the next game for whatever it matters. I think Cleveland loses a game like that, they got to come back, and I know that LeBron was dominant in that game, but I think he's going to be even bigger. Now, he's saying that he's the best that he's ever been, and he missed a game-winning shot at the very end. But, you know, he's already put the team on his back, has 44 points. He's not a selfish player. He just seems like somebody who is kind of assessing the situation and taking it over. But don't forget Kevin Love, the great player, out for the series, and when he got injured, it looked like the guy had grabbed his arm and tried to hurt him. That's the only impression I have. I don't think they do enough in sports to go after, this is even for football, they do it probably better in football, but they don't go after people who purposefully injure other people. Like this guy used to play, Bruce Bowen used to play for the San Antonio Spurs. He used to regularly kick people between the legs, put his foot under their feet so that they would land and twist or break their ankle. I mean, just a terrible person. And he was never, ever sanctioned, and now he's on TV. All right, here's, by popular request, Basketball Jones, Cheech and Chong. All right, so that's because of the request there. All right, let's go over some of the headlines. As I was mentioning to you, the gentleman, R.J. Hernandez, who had whistleblown down at the county, was fired. Now, generally speaking, there are laws that predict whistleblowers. Although I read a study one time that said whistleblowers, by and large, are always punished by the organization that they're in. So he said he was not surprised to be. He expected it to be fired. And... I'll get back to that story in a minute, but I just find the way that this is playing out is so predictable. Now, I wonder, is anybody who was a big fan of Julie Brown's when she showed up here, are anybody you disappointed? I'm not saying they should be, of course, but I'm just kind of curious. I mean, it, she doesn't really seem to be like she's breaking any records for her job. But anyway, Perry's in the race, Texas, former Texas governor in the race. It's electrifying. According to some, he says, I've been tested, battle tested. Jeb is finally ready now. Trump is trash talking the field. There's like 15 people in the field, and it's pretty strong, in my opinion. Hannity is the go-to place for the campaign launch. And so the Republican field gets even bigger. You know what that means? That there's a lot of people, there's a lot of hope. There's a lot of thinking on the Republican side that they can come in and win. Now, here's a question for you, kind of open topic Friday for you, question. If a Republican gets in and the Republican has the House and the Senate, what will these so-called conservatives do to push back against this administration's decision-making? Will they go after Obamacare? Well, I got news for you. They've said they're not going to try to repeal Obamacare, number one. Here's just a few facts for you. Number two, Cruz got his whole family on it, supposedly the most conservative member of the Senate, from what I understand. And that a third thing is that there is a statement out there that even if the Supreme Court goes after these subsidies and destroys Obamacare through that, that the Republicans will resurrect it. So here's the thing. This is my take on this. You tell me if I'm wrong. 5-2-3-14-50. I think people didn't want Obamacare because it was not supported by the majority, and they didn't go through both houses. And people really thought that it was just getting shoved down their throat, and they were lied to. The people on the right and in the middle, and some people even on the left, because this law is like 55-60% of the people wanted it to be repealed. People don't like things forced on it. I think that's the main thing, because it's un-American, because of the declaration saying that you've got to rule by the consent of the majority. Now, it is the fantasy of the left to think that they see things clearly, they know all the answers, that they come in. I'm talking about the far left here, friends, not you Democrats that listen to the show, but people on the far left who think they're elites, who believe that they see deep into the future, that they know better than any person, especially any conservative or any religious person. They know better, and they're going to force these dumb conservatives, the ones that have to be lied to, they're going to force them into the future. And then later generations will come in and celebrate these brilliant elitists. And that's what the people on the right, that's what the GOP base, that's what the grassroots are fighting back against. Or now when they see that the GOP is going along, they feel betrayed as usual, and they realize that people are running for office and lying their rear ends off. And they don't like it. And so this is what people on the right, and I think that I would speak for a majority here if I said that what people wanted was for the law to be canceled and then rebuilt from the ground up with a majority's input on it. I think that would be great. Whether it's realistic, I have no idea. Apparently it's not realistic at all. So we're just stuck with Obamacare. So anyway... all right, so let us come back and talk about, I had so many topics yesterday I didn't get to that I thought were kind of interesting, which I will kind of roll out for you. In the meantime, by the way, we'll get back to the story about RJ and his whistleblowing, that Julie Brown was so grateful. Now, how about this? These guys are so grateful that this guy exposed the stuff going on that included things over the border, which, as far as I know, could have included somebody in the cartel trying to, you know, fundraise a little bit. Although, why 1995? Why people born in 1995? This is like something from a movie, you know? Anybody into numerology? The importance of numbers? Anyway, they're so grateful to this guy for pointing out this fraud going on, they immediately fire him. So, what do you get? What do you expect? No whistleblower goes unpunished. 6:30 on the button, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, 523-1450, open discussion Friday, call in. It is 6:33, and it's a continuing scandal down at the county building, and it has to do now today. We've got news that the person who was the whistleblower was fired. His job was to put out policies for polling places and stuff in this county. And they have said that he's, without any reason, been terminated. And supposedly Lynn Allen's DeGeneres has put a lot of, which I had to name him after he strenuously came out and declared gay marriage legal in the county before some of the state had. We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
You're up early, Mike. What's going on?
I was just wondering, Kelly, you know, the other day Greg brought up that about Ben Carson being a Seventh Day Adventist.
Yes.
You know, I was reading something about him, and he said that he doesn't really adhere to any particular denomination. Do you know anything about that?
I never heard that he said that, but I don't know. So what did that mean to you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's baptized twice into the Mormon Church.
Who was?
But I guess
who?
Ben Carson.
Really?
Ben Carson.
Never heard that.
Yeah. Well, hold on. I'm trying to figure out something. The Seventh-day Adventists.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little something about them?
American denomination, as opposed to some of the old older mainline denominations that came over from England and Europe. And it is there is something interesting, because this is something that I've never heard anybody talk about, but I've read about it before. The Seventh-day Adventists are not considered to be a cult according to traditional Christian theology, but there are a number of cults that have been traced back to them. So there are some things that people would say were in error or heresy, but in general, the gospel is in the Seventh-day Adventists. Now, that's basically what I know in it. And if you're a Seventh-day Adventist, feel free to call in. But there are some aspects of Seventh-day Adventism that are out of the norm, and out of what is normally considered a traditional or orthodox. And I'm not talking about Eastern or Catholic. I'm talking about orthodox, meaning the generally accepted theology of the Bible.
Is there any connection with the Jehovah Witnesses?
Yes. But I'm for whatever reason, Seventh-day Adventism has been a source of other religious offshoots like the Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, why that is, I have no idea, but there was something kind of, some maybe ferment within the Seventh-day Adventists that put out kind of shoots, but a lot of these shoots, they would claim, a Christian theologian would claim, would be a cult, and so there's supposedly a connection between Mormonism and Seventh-day Adventism and Jehovah's Witnesses and some other groups. But I believe that the Seventh-day Adventists are considered to be orthodox in terms of their Christology, their position on Christ, and their I don't want to throw out a bunch of theological terms, but their description of salvation is or soteriology is supposedly valid. That's what I know. And I don't claim to be a theologian.
Well, I guess that's what Greg meant when he says Mike should look into it before, and maybe just go down, you know, before he goes down his rabbit hole.
Did Greg say something about the Seventh-day Adventists?
Well, he said that Mike ought to investigate Ben Carson a little bit.
Well, I mean, so here's the thing. I mean, obviously, I think this would have been a showstopper maybe 20, 30 years ago, but it's not anymore, because you've got somebody like Mitt Romney that many people would claim that the Mormons are heretical in their teaching, and many people would Christian theologians would say they're a cult. Mitt Romney ran. He was supported broadly by Christians, as opposed to President Obama, who was claimed to be variously non-Christian, or in a that the church in Chicago was a Christian cult, or that he was Muslim or an atheist. So Mitt Romney was seen as superior. So I don't know. I find it strange. You know, I mean, this president does not, as a general practice, go to church, and nobody makes a big deal out of it.
Yeah, I was wondering, Kelly, does like Seventh-day Adventists, do they believe in that magic undies thing?
The spiritual underwear is exclusive to, if I am not mistaken, the LDS Church, the Church of Latter-day Saints. They don't like to be called Mormons. They would prefer to be called LDS. And I know that there's some Mormons that listen to the show. Feel free. Anybody have any of these groups is free to call in and straighten me out. But I had at one point in my life made it a study to try to understand what all the different sects believe and where they came from and everything. And I found that it's actually helped me to understand a lot of stuff that is happened later, because the United States is a very, very religious and spiritual country.
So Kelly, the whole idea, like the magic underwear, that would have nothing to do with like Seventh-day Adventists.
Well, let me do a little bit of research. It seems like you're kind of hinting here. Is there something that you know about?
Well, no, I was just wondering, because I find that kind of interesting. I'm going to do some research on that magic undie thing, because, you know, Mitt Romney must wear them. Is that true?
I frankly have never been in his boudoir.
Between him, between Mitt Romney and Obama sitting in that Reverend Wright's church, you know?
Yeah. Now, the Reverend Wright's church was a derivative of Reverend Cohn, who had written a great deal on race issues. And that church, the theology in Obama's church, Trinity in Chicago, stated that there were a couple of elements that caught my eye. Number one was this, I think of this idea of redistribution of wealth, that blacks should be recompensed for slavery and stuff, and that God was racially minded. And if you were praying to a God that was not, that did not put race relations first and did not try to build up and raise up blacks, that that was not a true Christian church. It's a very, I would say that church was very Marx, very influenced by Marxism and certain racial theories.
You know, I was reading something about Marx, and didn't Engel bail out Marx at the end? I mean, Marx was, like,
okay, so
going bankrupt or something?
Engel was the partner of Marx. Engel's father owned a bunch of factories, and so he was out of wealth. And this is very classic for people. A lot of people who get into far leftism do so because of, from what I can gather, would be a feeling of guilt that they've got, you know, some and other people don't. They have wealth and others don't. Engels.
So, okay.
Well, just to answer your question, Engels basically supported, they were writing partners. Marx was the more creative mind, and that Engels had supported him for pretty much his entire career.
So it's like capitalism came to the rescue of Marx.
Yeah, but I mean, if you do a study of Russia, during the period of time that it existed as a communist nation, it was continually bailed out by various people in the United States. And if it hadn't been, it would have ceased to exist long ago, long before it fell. But
so I just wanted to have a shout out to this Hernandez, the whistleblower here.
Yeah, he's supposed to come on the show Wednesday.
Good for him, man. And I hope he sticks to his guns, because we need more of that. There's too much of this stuff that's like hidden. And people are afraid to come out because of their pensions and all this crap.
Do you think that maybe Lynn Ellen's DeGeneres wears magic underwear?
I don't think she wears any underwear. I think she rides bareback.
I'm talking about Lynn Ellen's, the county commissioner. Anyway, or the...
You meant Ellen DeGeneres.
No, I had to give him the name Lynn Ellen's DeGeneres because he was a crusader for gay marriage. But anyway, Mike, I got to go. We're running out of time. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. Let me do a little bit of research here on Seventh-day Adventism. I think that I've got it broadly, have it broadly correct. So 644, this is AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Call in. If you're Mormon and you want to defend your faith, and it is spiritual undergarments. It's not magic underwear. And had never heard Ben Carson was double baptized by the Mormons, but anything's possible. We will be right back. All right, so Kelly here, and not to be redundant, but here is a little bit here of what Seventh-day Adventists believe. They believe pretty much everything that other Orthodox Christians believe. What they deviate on, though, is they believe that the Sabbath is on Saturday, Seventh-day Adventists, you know, seventh day. And so I guess the week would go from seven to seven, from Saturday to Saturday. And a few of the things that they believe in is that Jesus is coming back imminently, but that's generally been a belief in the history of the church. And there is a few other things that, as I recall, now I'm starting to, sometimes you get confused between Seventh-day Adventists and Jehovah's Witnesses. A difference between a Jehovah's Witness and a Seventh-day Adventist, a Jehovah Witness would not believe Christ is God, that he was the first created person. So they believe that there's 144,000 people that will be saved out of history. And so the reason that Jehovah's Witnesses go door to door is they believe they have to have 20 hours of witnessing or something like that per week to be in the running. So, but they're not Trinitarian. Now, Seventh-day Adventists abstain from alcohol, tobacco, and every other, quote, soul-defiling habit. Trying to see anything else here. So, I mean, they're generally Orthodox Christians. So, anyway, got to do a little investigative research here on Ben Carson. But I think generally, if he's non-denominational, I don't know. But I've just heard that he's Seventh-day Adventist. So anyway, I don't think his faith is going to be any big deal because Obama apparently doesn't have an active church membership. He doesn't go to church. The church that he went to in Chicago was kind of a racial Marxist church that was brought in racist and Marxist ideas into the Bible. So anyway, all right, some more headlines here for you. Jobs just came out. Now, I've got to study this thing, but it says May jobs plus 280,000 rates rise to 5.5%. So 5.5% unemployment. There is, though, there's a lot of people who've dropped out, and there have been stories in there that said that there are shocking stories, like maybe a third of people over 55 have no savings whatsoever. Number two, people simply don't have a lot of cash these days unless they're wealthy. And trillions of dollars have been wiped out in wealth in this country in the last 7 or 8 years since that last crash. And things are kind of grim. That is something I wanted to throw out since it's kind of open topic. I guess every day is open topic for me, but I wanted to throw out this idea that we've kind of got this fight. We're in the middle of a culture war right now in the United States. And one half of the people approximately believe that economics is a good thing. Economic growth is a good thing. They're not worried about global warming. They believe in capitalism. And a lot of other things. But on this particular issue, they see the growth, ever-increasing size of the economy corresponds to an ever-increasing size in the population and is a healthy thing and is part of a viable democracy. Now, those are people on the right. The people on the left are more distracted by global warming and the evils of capitalism and the need to do whatever we can to push back on rampant growth that's going to burn up the planet and take advantage of the poor and all this stuff. And it seems to me that those ideas right now are winning because we have gone on for 6 or 7 years of underperforming economy. And it's a clash of beliefs that I find pretty interesting because only one of them can generally be true. And I think that's playing out here in the city council and in the county, whereas you've got people that are highly resistant, it would seem to me, to having a traditional economy, which helps explain why we got so many empty shops. And it helps explain why they feel like they need to increase taxes as opposed to growing the economy and our gross receipts are down and everything. So if all of these ideas on the left are wrong, for instance, global warming, for example, that capitalism is evil, that slant drilling or fracking is poisoning the water. The EPA just said, by the way, that it's not. But if they're all wrong, isn't it time that the left comes to the middle and helps support the economy so we can be prosperous again and people can be happier because they can pay their bills and have a little bit of retirement? Just a question for you. Anyway, 6:53, Open Topic Friday. It's AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBM. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and we will be back with... I'm going to bring up one of these kind of interesting topics I had from yesterday to throw out at you. And I saw an interesting article by George Will on Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders is the socialist in the House, or in the Senate, pardon me, from Vermont. Now, George Will pointed out that basically Sanders, who's claiming to be a socialist, is really no different than any of the other people in his party. Further, this was eye-opening for me. He pointed out that to a large extent, we've accepted many socialist ideas while getting rid of this idea that used to define socialism, that the government would own the means of production and distribute everything. When people no longer even try to get that established for socialism. But between 1960 and 2010, the growth of entitlement spending, which is redistribution of wealth, exploded from 28% to 66% of federal spending. For a half century, entitlement payments were America's fastest growing source of personal income. And in any given year, growth was on the whole over 8% higher if the president happened to be a Republican rather than a Democrat. So I think that to a large extent, we bought into many of the ideas of socialism. Now, America's welfare state transfers more than 15% of GDP to recipients in 2010. Government at all levels redistributed more than $2.2 trillion in money, goods, and services. That's $7,200 per person, $29,000 for a family of four. That's astounding. I didn't know that, and it really opened my eyes. And this is coming from a guy by the name of, well, I just clicked off the article, but there, it's a guy who's just does a lot of this type of investigative economic journalism. But yeah, I don't see how we're really never going to avoid, you know, some type of socialism in this country now, having come face to face with those facts. It's kind of depressing, but it's the direction that we've moved. in the meantime, we don't have to move more quickly in that direction, do we? Anyway, thanks for tuning into the first hour. It is 6:59 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We'll get into some more juicy topics in the next hour. Well, it's 7:06, and it's Friday. Thank goodness it's Friday. Do you think that it's disrespectful to say, thank God it's Friday? Well, you sure don't. You don't think it's disrespectful if you're an atheist or an agnostic. Now, atheism and agnosticism is growing. We've heard that. I've mentioned it on the show. This is just coming to mind right now. I just wanted to throw this out. The Christian music industry has crashed. They sold 50 million albums a few years ago, 10, 15 years ago, and now they're down to 17 million. And they say, they were saying in this article I was reading that it had to do with less enthusiasm about Christianity in the culture, which may be true, but I was thinking, you know, aren't all, I mean, you can get in music so easily on YouTube and places that a lot of people no longer buy music. But there's no doubt that Christianity is falling away. Another area that you can see Christianity falling away is in Alcoholics Anonymous, believe it or not. There's a new movement out to get rid of the model in AA of the God model. And if you've ever seen the 12 steps, and I've been to AA before to for family and friends. I'm fortunate that I didn't go through it myself, but especially being Irish. But anyway, this 12 steps has got God in there a lot, and it's very offensive to some people. And they have said that, you know, you don't need, atheists and agnostics don't believe you need a God. Now, I talked to a few people on this, and they said, well, it's really not so much, it's not religious. It is the idea, maybe it's spiritual as opposed to religious, these people would argue, that the idea being that there's a power greater than you, that you're not at the center of the universe, and that there are this acknowledgement of a power greater than you is somehow supposedly instrumental in helping quit. Although, as they pointed out, a lot of people who go through AA never quit. So there's a big debate out there. Now, I was talking at the end of the show, the first hour, about the welfare payments and everything. Let me ask you this, 523-1450. Do you think the country as a whole would be more better off with less welfare, less people on welfare? Do you think that welfare harms people long term? Anybody can be in a situation short term, obviously, where they need some help. But people who are on welfare long term, do you think it's inevitable? I mean, there's always going to be a certain percentage of people that don't work for whatever reason, right? But do you think it's harmful to the human spirit, to human development, to be on welfare or not? And do you think that we would be on that we would be a better country? Because I'm thinking about all the money that we're spending on social welfare. How strong of a country would we be? We're the world's number one economy. How strong would this country be economically if we, let's say we cut social welfare in half. Social welfare is more than 50% of the budget. Social welfare, all of the different stuff, Medicare, Medicaid, welfare, all the different ways that you know, they say that the number of people on food stamps is at an all-time high. The number of people on welfare. Would this be a better country? Let's just say we made it a goal to get half of the people off welfare. Would that help or harm America? Now, let's throw that out there. I don't think anybody's going to call in on this because I suspect I know what the average listener's opinion is. But they, you know, there's this debate from the Reagan era that, and it was David Stockman and some other people who came up with these ideas that if you cut the tax rate, you'll actually get more taxes to come in. Now, the tax rate that people will naturally pay is 17%. After that, they will begin to hide income and not work as much. So they cut taxes in Carolina. That's according to studies, of course. They cut taxes in the tax rate in Carolina and found, this is North Carolina, and found that tax revenues have increased 6% and the state has a $4 million budget. Now, I'm just going to throw that out there to you because it has been a controversial issue. Two ways to look at this. Get more taxes. Look at what we're doing locally. Get more taxes by increasing the tax rate and then don't tell people what it's for, on the one hand. On the other hand, we've got a phone call here. Hello? Can you hear me?
Hi there, guys. This is your average listener, Tim.
Tim, it sounds like you're re-entering the atmosphere. What's going on?
Actually, you know what? I'm between zones. Let me call you right back. Sorry,
okay,
bye.
Thank you. All right. So look at it. This seems abstract until we look at the county and the city. What is the practical impact of saying we have to increase the tax rate to get more taxes? It backfires because we're getting less. Thanks for the call. Is this Tim?
No, this is Tekashi calling.
Oh, Tekashi, what's going on, man? Good morning to you.
How are you doing this morning, Kelly? Good morning.
How you doing? Good morning to you. What's up?
Let me ask you a question, man. Those guys in Washington that we hire, and they get to drive private cars and have dinners and drink wine all day. Isn't that a form of welfare, being that we're paying their salary and they live such lavish lives on our dollar?
Well, here's two approaches to that. Number one, keep the pay for our public officials down so that they're not acting like royalty. But on the other hand, if you don't pay them enough, doesn't it lead to a temptation to take bribes?
I mean, Kelly, they already take bribes with this lobbying stuff. All these companies, they all lobby for. But let me ask you this.
Yeah.
When you have a car waiting for you downstairs, a driver, a security guard, a bottle of wine, a red carpet outside of a restaurant door, do you perform? Do you want to work? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's welfare. Not the little $50 that people get to buy food. Welfare is all these kings and queens in Washington, these congressmen and these senators living on our dollar. Let's get them off welfare.
Is this a pre-recorded call? Hey, let me ask you this. Do you think that people, just leave it in, instead of including all of these plutocrats, these fat cats that are getting drunk all day, according to you, and getting driven around while they're blind drunk, would you can guess from your own knowledge of people, the people that you've known, are people happier on welfare or off welfare generally?
Well, I don't know anybody on welfare, to tell you the truth, Kelly, but honestly, from what I've seen, there's all kinds of people on welfare. And apparently, some people have real jobs, real families, but they just can't cut it as far as their grocery bills go, their light bills. Maybe they choose to live in a city with too much high of a whatever you call it.
All right, so that gets back to it. That's where the rubber hits the road. I'm glad you brought that up. We're living in a county where they feel like they need to continually raise taxes for whatever reason. They're not going to use it for the sheriff. But is it better to have a bigger economy, a smaller tax rate, and more tax revenue based on a bigger economy? Or is it better to have a smaller economy with higher tax rates? Because you can't have both.
Well, it's simple math. I would say bigger economy, more tax revenue.
Agreed.
You know what I'm saying?
Agreed.
Kickbacks for the people, you know, who's paying this. See, that's what I'm saying, Kelly. When you have a bunch of people that wakes up every morning and they have to put no... as far as effort, their checks, you don't get performance from them.
Then we agree. Tekashi, thanks for the call. Call back if you want to. I have another caller. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Tim, your average listener. Sorry, Kelly, I was going through county lines in a Jeep. But anyway, I did want to say something about the people. Well, I want to say your general welfare question.
Yes.
Can I just say something economically about
it? I'm listening.
Okay. Generally, I think that basically people who get welfare money, money that they would not otherwise get because their income is so low or whatever the deal is, they're homeless. So single people get automatically $200 in food stamps if you're homeless and don't have an income or whatever.
Okay.
That immediately goes back into the economy and does produce some kind of economic activity. And I think it's a lot better than having the wealthiest tax margins reduced.
Tim,
that's my opinion.
All right, Tim, now let me just say this. Nobody's going to argue that being homeless is a better situation. I don't even think you need to include those people. And I would think most people that are homeless aspire to have a home or an apartment, and nobody's going to argue that they're going to feel better off living off $200 and sleeping in a tent. But just generally speaking, are people happy? I think it's common sense that if people have a job, they have a focus in life. If the jobs are there and if they can make enough money, it seems like they're going to be better psychologically.
Yeah, if they have jobs to go to, yes, and if they are capable. I know a lot of people, not a lot. I have like maybe a half dozen friends I stay in close touch with, but a couple of them are on permanent disability, both of them 100%, and they're not happier with the pittance that they get, $800 for one of them and $1,300 for the other one. That's not really enough to live.
Tim,
a job where you make like $3,000 a month at least would be so much better.
Tim. What is the disability? What's the general category of the disabilities?
One of them has more metal in him than a car. He's had 3 hip replacements. He's been thrown out of a car at 70 miles an hour with a broken jaw, just a mangled guy. And the other girl, her neck was completely severed, and she has plates and stuff all in it, so she can't even turn or anything like that. There's physical disability, but there's a lot of mental disability out there right now, too.
All right. Do you think that if we made a movement in America to cut welfare in half, in other words, to direct welfare at the neediest cases, 10 years later, we would have a happier country?
No, honestly, no, because right now we need to focus on helping people, like, basically get to a point in their lives where they're out of poverty at least, get to that point at least, and then we can focus on creating more jobs. And then we can focus on increasing the economy, but we have to save the people first,
okay,
or they're just going to go under.
Tim, the question then is the way that people get out of poverty through welfare?
It can be. It can help a lot of people get to a point in their lives where they don't have to worry about feeding their families or if their lights are going to go off. And that can help them focus on their careers, yes, but not as a permanent solution, no, unless they have a permanent disability.
All right, agreed. With people that we are this kind of classic biblical, widows and orphans and handicapped people should always have state support of some kind. But anyway, it sounds to me like we're in agreement. If we can get these people off of welfare, if we can find a clever way to get them employed, they're going to be happy.
Why aren't there job programs? Sorry, not to interrupt you, but why aren't there more job programs here in the county? I'm a young man who needs on-the-job training, and I haven't had any chances at all, really, to get out of poverty myself. And I'm chomping at the bit, Kelly, to find something around here.
Tim, have you thought about joining the military, for example?
Yeah, I have, but I got a problem with being someone assigned to the state like that, you know? I'm an anti-statist. You know that. I'm an anti-statist communist.
All right, Tim, I got another call. Thanks for the call. We've got your opinion very, very well stated. Thank you. Thanks for the call to the Kelly Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Bill.
Bill, yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, it turns out that we got no farm workers. You know, we're out here, like, beating the bushes for people to cut our lettuce, to cut all different kinds of produce that we have. We can't find anyone. Maybe something might have happened with people on welfare that need to come out and put in, maybe 4 hours a day or something, early hours, so not cooking in the sun, But we've got nobody to do this, I mean, they're all coming up from El Paso in buses and stuff, and I mean, it's ridiculous, We have people with signs around Las Cruces, that I'm hungry and this and that and stuff, And all I have to do is go to the labor department, and they'll have them down here the next day.
Interesting. All right, Bill, thank you. Anything else?
Stay armed.
Thanks a lot. Take care. All right, folks, take a little break here. And supposedly the vaqueros are coming in, but I don't see any hide nor hair of them. But it is AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. And we just talked, but right before Bill, we talked to a real live communist. And live to tell about it, which didn't always happen in China and Russia, but we'll be right back. No, I'm sorry. I was thinking to myself, I got to bring him in. Thank you. when we're doing directional mics, so you got to be like a rock star, have your face right in it.
I understand. Well, there's a lot of things that done, but if you want to hear yourself, what are we going to talk about? What I assume that we came to talk about. Are you here for a reason? What's the reason? And why do you want people to back you up, or why should you back you up? That's an easy argument to make. You want to put that on the game in town? What's your first book? Right now, Lefty, you must be a pitcher. What a waste. Oh, really?
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, real fast. This is Kiki. I just want to give you some info.
Hey, Kiki. Let me hold on a second.
I'll call you back. Don't put me in the air. I just want to give you some info.
Hey, Kiki, 496-6359. Okay?
496 what?
6359.
Okay.
Thank you. It is Kelly here, and we've got the Vaqueros in the studio, but I also got a call. Who's this?
This is Bill again. You know, I forgot to tell you something.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's important that you have a show, like maybe a whole show on the water situation.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it. Thanks, Bill.
Let me know.
Absolutely. All right, folks. We have the Vaqueros here and the baseball team. And they are Ben, is it Grillo? Grillo, and any relation to Bear Grylls?
No, I wish, though.
You wish. And we have James Taylor. Where's your guitar?
Too bad I can't sing.
He cannot sing. We have Daryl Carrillo is the manager.
Yes, sir.
Gentlemen, thank you for coming to the show.
Thank you for having us.
All right. So Ben is first base, and he's ambidextrous.
Yeah, unfortunately, I write left-handed but play baseball right.
Well, you must be creative.
A little bit. Yeah.
All right. And James Taylor's the pitcher. How tall are you?
6'3".
Wow. And, so, Daryl, why don't you start off and give us a little background? Some people may not know about the Vaqueros.
Sure. Los Cruces Vaqueros was developed about 4 years ago, and then they left. We brought them back this year. They took a two-year break, I believe. It's always been a pretty good league. They started off with, like, four teams. Now we're up to eight.
What's the name of the league?
Pecos League.
Okay.
It's a professional independent league. There's several independent leagues throughout the country. We're one of them. Our league is basically a league of opportunity. We want kids to come in here. We try to get them out as quick as we can to a higher league and affiliated ball. My catcher last year is playing high A with the Baltimore Orioles. He got picked up. So that's what our league's about. For our community, our league is about having our kids come out and see a bigger value of baseball, dream bigger. I do camps and stuff in California and LA, and I see the kids. Everybody wants to be a Dodger, you know. They don't want to be their UCLA Bruin or one of their high schools. They want to be Dodgers or Angels. And that's what we're trying to bring to our kids is we want them to dream big, think big, so they can move on to the next level.
Well, Daryl, let me ask you something. Where do you find your kids? These are kids that are not drafted when they do the draft every
No,
year.
We've got kids that have been drafted.
Okay.
We had a kid last year named Bautista. There's actually a movie on him called The Pelotero from the Dominican. I got kids from Dominican. I got a kid coming in tonight from Venezuela.
Well, how do you find your kids? Where do you find these prospects?
Well, I'm one of the few that have more of the out-of-country kids.
Yeah.
The league has kind of pushed them towards me.
But it's appropriate for this area, isn't it? They feel comfortable here. It's more of a Hispanic.
Yeah, it is.
It
really helps
yeah.
instead of sending them to the Midwest or Kansas, where we do have a team now. So it works good. I'm the only, pretty much the only Spanish speaking manager in the league.
Really?
Yes, sir.
We need to look into this.
Yes, we do.
We need a congressional investigation.
So that's what we're doing. And like I said, I got kids from Cuba, Dominican, and I'll have my Venezuela kid tonight. And
so
I got a kid that's supposed to be coming in. It just got released. He was he hurt his shoulder. He was throwing 101 miles an hour. He got released. He going to rehab. He wants to come here for a couple weeks. And he's supposed to be like 97, 98 miles an hour. I'm waiting for him to come in. He's from Mexico.
Do you think he'll ever get over 100 again?
Hard to say.
Yeah.
97's pretty gosh dang fast.
All right. So, Ben, what is your story? Where are you from?
I'm from Kennesaw, Georgia. You know, I grew up dreaming big, just like Coach talked about. I always wanted to play professionally.
And you did pretty well in high school? And
yeah, I did. I did well in high school and then signed and played 4 years of college ball.
Where?
And then I played in Manual College in Northeast Georgia, D2 school. And then after college, just tried to take the next step and found my way out here in the Pecos, playing in Las Cruces, trying to take the next step after that.
Is it exciting to play pro ball or semi-pro ball?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's it's part of my childhood dream. I'm living it up right now, and it's been great out here so far. The community support and everything has been wonderful. Going out, and seeing people, and running these camps and getting to know these kids has been, truly amazing experience. And that's what we're all about right now, is getting the community support, because the game's bigger than us, and it'll be here when we're gone. And that's one of our goals.
All right, and James Taylor, what's your story?
Okay, I'm from Allen, Texas. I played baseball there, and then I played baseball at Southeastern Oklahoma State University, Division II in Durant, Oklahoma. I was playing my senior year. I hurt my arm, and so I had to have a surgery. So the last couple of years, that was in 2012, the last couple of years I've been rehabbing, so I'm back here, back to throwing. So I'm trying to just make it. I had some scouts talk to me before I got hurt, but obviously drops off once you get hurt. So here I'm just trying to work on it, see if I can get some experience to work back up, see if I can maybe go to the next league.
Tommy John surgery?
Yes. I tore a ligament in my right elbow, so I'm a pitcher.
And so how's your velocity compared to what it used to be?
It's about the same. I've gotten back up. I was about 92 to 94 miles an hour before I got hurt, and I'm starting to get back up there, sitting around that same speed.
Cool. So. And all right, so where'd you say you grew up?
Allen, Texas, just north of Dallas.
All right. So, well, guys, how can people support it? What's the most obvious way to support the team?
Just come out and watch them play.
Where do they play?
Apodaca Park, 7 o'clock. All our home games are here, 7 o'clock at Apodaca Park. Tonight is 50 Cent Hot Dog Night. Come out. They sell beer. Cokes are $1. Water's $1 tonight. Last night we had about 200 people, and it's been good baseball. Probably the best baseball I've seen in the Pecos League since I've been around it, and I've been around it since day one.
Are you guys how far into the season are you?
Oh, we just started.
All right.
We play 70 games in 72 days, and we just finished our, 15th game.
Do you think you have a chance to take the league?
No, I don't have a chance. We're going to.
You're
going to
take the league. All right. What's the number to call in for tickets or to find out more?
They can call me at 505-463-2122.
One more time, a little more slowly.
505-463-2122.
Okay, so the games are at 7 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
And they're at Apodaca Park.
Yes, sir.
And where's Apodaca Park?
Apodaca Park is at the corner of Solano and Anita Drive.
All right, so
Madrid and Solano.
Yeah, it's right over there near where Highway 70 is kind of going up. And,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
You'll see the lights on. We turn on the lights as soon as we start the game, so.
Okay. All right. Gentlemen, anything else? No.
No, we just want to thank you for your opportunity, support from the city. Last night we had two teams in the dugout. We keep them in the dugout. We take care of them, make sure they don't get hit by balls. They're little five-year-olds, actually in a pro dugout, 9 innings. So, like I said, we're here for the community, and we want the community to be here for us.
We appreciate it. Well, thanks for coming on. And Daryl, James, and Ben, really appreciate it.
We thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot. Folks, we're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back and talk about some exciting stuff. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. We will be right back.
Thank you, sir.
It is 7:37. You're flying the friendly skies. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. I just got some information. Just got some information, and the information tells me that Anna Hines, who is head of IT, is now gone. So she's on administrative leave. So the person said, draw your own conclusion. I've gotten information from persons that are telling me that the investigation in the county is, and by the way, this has to do with the scam that was going on in the county building. And Anna Hines, who's the head of IT for the county, is on administrative leave. And so the implication is that the IT director was involved. What if there were 20 people involved in this scam? At what point do you start pointing fingers at Lynn Ellens, who I'm told is never in the building, and that may or may not be correct, but it might be an over exaggeration, but he may not spend a lot of time down there. Is he an absentee landlord? I've been told Lynn Ellens is a heck of a guy. On the other hand, the thing with gay marriage was very progressive, and I didn't really quite understand it, although it's the movement of the future. We got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Michael.
Michael, thank you for calling in. Hope you're doing well. And what's on your mind?
Well, every day's good and some days are better, but I'm really getting concerned because a very un-American thing happens whenever someone is charged with a crime in America. And I'm really concerned about it.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, what really changed America to be what we are is the presumption of innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Okay, fair enough.
And on all of the Facebook, I'm so far being pushed around by people who are saying, oh, no, I know that those guys are guilty. And I'm really sick of it.
All right.
Nothing wrong with what you're saying that somebody else has been, you know, stopped. But are we truly presuming them innocent or not?
That's a good point. And I mean, that is a legal standard, but I think it's fair to give people the benefit of the doubt.
Well, it's not the benefit of the doubt. It is the presumption.
Right.
It is not doubt.
But
I understand, Mike,
but hold on one second. Remember one thing, that if we take the presumption of innocence out of the courtroom, out of the justice system, and apply it in society, it is actually two different things. I mean, if you saw your neighbor shoot gun down his wife in cold blood from beginning to end, there's a presumption of guilt in the courtroom, but you know that guy's guilty. Now, you may not know all the details, but you know what I'm saying. Now, in this particular case, I'll be the first to admit I don't know anything about this scam other than what I read in the paper.
Well, okay, I'm going to give you one more data point.
All right.
Now Lynn Ellens and I and those people don't get along all that well.
All right.
But I was dealing with a legal issue, so I went over to file the paper. And they said something to me, and I said, well, I don't really understand that, Lynn Ellens. And he walked right out. Now, it's only one data point. He was there this one day a couple weeks ago. I went over there. He came out. He spoke well to me. He answered my question, which was somewhat of a legal nature, and that was fine. So I hear people saying, well, you know, he doesn't spend much time there. And, I'm just as anxious as you are to clean all that up. But I think this is a gut check about the Constitution for the media.
Fair enough. But let me throw something else out in there. People feel like the local government, by and large, is disconnected, and they see that taxes are coming out of the county, and they're not going over to the sheriff, who's underfunded. And they don't know where the taxes are going, and they see that we're not making as much money from gross receipts as all the places around us. And they hear the various commissions or county or city voting against garbage bags or wanting the president to know that we're opposed to global warming. And people feel anxious and they feel underrepresented, and they also feel like that they're traveling down the road in some sort of a, you know, some sort of a bus where the bus driver's off taking a smoke break somewhere in the back. People are very anxious and nervous, and the scam only adds to that.
Well, and again, we have the government that we voted for or chose not to vote for.
All right.
And so our issue is that it isn't who voted for these guys and people. It is the people who sat at home and now are upset.
Yeah,
it is
but
the people
Mike,
that in
Mike,
August, September, and October of voting years
Mike, hold on
don't,
a second.
Don't get out and get going.
I understand, but let me say this. You meet a lady. She seems nice. You date a little bit, and you get married, and you find out that later she's an alcoholic and she's cheating on you all the time. Just because you chose her doesn't mean you have to put up with that.
Well, and I'm not saying put up with it, but we also elected, and I voted against him, the district attorney. And
right.
And you have to let him do his job. But I'm actually one step farther removed, Kelly, and here it is, which is it is very un-American of the media to really kind of wink, wink, nod, nod, know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are really guilty, you know. And if you don't uphold the Constitution when it makes you furious, when somebody says, well, I sure like to spit on the flag, if you don't allow them their First Amendment rights, then you are spitting on the Constitution.
Right, okay,
and so the whole issue here is
right.
you got to presume innocence.
Mike, I'm going to tell you this again, and it drives me crazy as an attorney. It drives me crazy when I hear people say that the assumption of innocence in a general setting goes to people because that's a legal setting. It's out of the judicial process. But I do believe that it's a Christian virtue, or maybe it's an enlightened agnostic virtue, to give people the benefit of the doubt. And I do agree with you on that.
Well, but what's the difference? And again, And I used to work for KOB-TV and worked for the Albuquerque Journal, owned my own newspapers, had my own
talk show.
I've done a lot of stuff. And the main thing I'm saying is the media needs to be held to a standard that you present your stories with the presumption
of
innocence.
All right, so let me restate this. All of the people in the scam controversy are presumed to be innocent until they're proven guilty in a court of law. How's that?
That's exactly right. And watch what the Sun News does and watch what the media does. And when you watch that report and you really are fair, did they get the presumption of innocence?
Right.
And the answer is, of course not.
Well, let's at least take it this much farther. We should have evidence presented to us that shows that these people are guilty before they are convicted.
That's a good question. I don't know if we should or shouldn't. You know, the first thing happens with a guy named Richard Jewell. Was they in Atlanta? Is they put all the evidence showing that he's the one that blew up that bomb? It killed that poor woman. She had every right to be alive. Blah blah blah. Pounded him out of Atlanta. The poor guy died. And guess what? We figured out like 6 years later.
He was innocent.
He didn't. He was completely innocent, and
Mike,
he was convicted, tried, and killed
Mike,
by the press.
I get your point, and I'm going to try to think about that in the future. And I, as a general rule, don't try to say that people are guilty until they've been found guilty in a court of law, unless it is obvious through some other means that they are. But I get your point. Michael,
let me give one more point to see if it moved your discussion. Kerr said it's better to risk saving a guilty man than to condemn an innocent one.
That is actually called Blackstone's ratio. It's better that 20 guilty people are set free than one innocent man convicted. That is from Blackstone. It's a cornerstone of American jurisprudence. I agree with it 100%.
Okay, thank you, Kelly.
Thanks a lot, and have a great day. All right, folks. Thank you, Michael. Great call. Let's celebrate our great callers here. We'll be right back, 7:46. I got something about marriage and sex, since it's in the media with Bruce Jenner and all these different things. We're saturated in it. We'll be right back. Kelly here, and I've just got some quick stuff for you. Denny Hastert was the Speaker of the House. It has turned out that the sister of a deceased man said that Denny Hastert had a years-long relationship with a young man who was called the right-hand man of this guy when he was running the wrestling team. And that 8 years after he left high school, the sister of this deceased guy had asked him, when's the first time you, who was gay, this guy was gay, when's the first time you had a same-sex experience? And he said it was with Coach Hastert. She said he was stunned. Now, this guy died of AIDS. Here's a very interesting fact. They've done studies of people who've picked up medication for AIDS related symptoms. They've had these people fill out paperwork and found out that a very high number of them, something like 45% of these people, were sexually abused as children. So here's the question. Did Denny Hastert have a sexual, who's obviously a homosexual, did he have a relationship with this young man that turned him gay, that then later cost him his life because of AIDS? There's a question for you. Now, related sexual topic. Do you know what the divorce rate is? I told you, I think, was it yesterday or the day before? Divorce rate of couples, straight couples, is around 45%. Now, with each divorce, the divorce and remarriage, the divorce rate goes up. Do you know what the divorce rate is for gay men? It is 55% above that, 55% above 45%, whatever, whoever is a math whiz can figure that out. The lesbian divorce rate is 167% above that. The lesbian divorce rate is 200% above the gay divorce rate. I'm not a math person, so I can't tell you. But I got this out of something called the IMAP policy brief from May 3, 2004, same-sex unions and divorce risk data from Sweden. So this is the one place where, you know, gay marriage has been going on a long time. Now, just kind of throw this out there for you. Do you know what the divorce rate is for people who've had one partner? They're married to the partner, that the only person they've ever slept with. For men, the divorce rate, if you've married your first sexual partner, is 2%. For women, it's 5%. So the chances of getting divorced for two people that are married as virgins are infinitesimally small. All right. Do we not to ourselves in this society, if we see divorce as something that's bad? I mean, by definition, people get married for life, right? The divorce impact on kids and on people, on adults, is hard. The number one driver of poverty in America is single mother households. Number one, there's no comparison. The implications for children growing up without fathers are astounding. I've mentioned this before. Fatherlessness is an extraordinary engine of crime and dysfunction. The rates of criminal activity, institutionalization, drug use, and the number of relationships that a person has are all directly, and suicide attempts, all these different things, are made much, much more likely if you don't have a father. So all these things, it seems like we would be, as a society, not based on religion, but just based on science, we would be highly recommended to do everything that we could to keep people from sleeping together before marriage with anybody, because divorce is so drastically, it has such a drastic impact on the human person in terms of economics and in terms of emotional difficulties and the children of these unions. And I see it all the time in my practice as an attorney. Why can't we aspire to go back to chastity and, marital fidelity? Because, not as a religious argument, but just as a human rights and a humanitarian movement to help people have a better life, to make the nation more prosperous. Does that make any sense? And we heard yesterday, I had the clip from Walt Heyer, the people who get sex changes, like the Bruce Jenners of the world, the transgenders, 41% attempt suicide, 10% or more refuse to accept their new identity or want to change back. So it's an over 50% failure rate. Let's have some compassion for people. Let's stand up for reality. That's my take on it. So you can call me a throwback, but this is not a religious argument. It is an argument based on wanting the best for other people. And it isn't that, even when you talk to the biggest atheist in history, what's your value? You ask him and you say the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. To have this general standard of care for other people. And it seems like the country is kind of falling apart at the seams and we're at each other's throat. Racism or racial complaints have never been higher. The divorce rate is up and the number of people that are on welfare, jobless, it's all these things are kind of moving together. And then you've got a role model like Bruce Jenner, who's just basically saying, if you feel like you need to do something, do it. And yet the studies show that these people who are transgender have deep and undiagnosed or untreated psychiatric problems that are not addressed by a gender transfer. Anyway, thanks for joining in today. Really enjoyed spending time with you. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend. And let's come back on Monday and do it again. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And we'll talk to you in 2 days. Ciao.